It's a great time right now for NFL fans. We're all getting ready for the playoffs. A lot of things to still to be decided. And for me, the marquee matchup this week, aside from, you know, the Rams and the Bears and some of these other ones, it is that NFC East matchup between the Dallas Cowboys and the Philadelphia Eagles. And I heard your podcast today, the Game Theory and Money podcast, of course. And you think that the Cowboys, according to your model, are going to win this one, a pretty tight one, 24-21. What is going to be the deciding factor in this game?
Well, kind of like we saw on Thursday night last week, it's really going to come down to the fact that they're linebackers and the defensive front, so pressures coming from all over that defensive line, are just going to be too much for, or projected to be too much for, you know, Carson Wentz and this Eagles offense that is really lacking a number one wide receiver and has a really inconsistent run game.
So if that's the case, and I agree with you that the Cowboys linebacker core with Jalen Smith and Leighton Vander Esch has been really good and the defense has been really good, how much do you really believe when Jerry Jones says when Sean Lee comes back, whenever that is, he's going to be the starter and it's going to force Van Der Esch back into kind of more of a rotational role? Do you really believe that that's going to end up being the case?
I believe Jerry Jones loves Sean Lee very, very much. Yeah. And I think it's kind of like a boosting up Sean Lee sort of I believe in you type situation. The funny part, you know, when we talk about it with, you know, a lot of the people who played for the Cowboys, it's like, sure, when he's available, like when he's available. I don't know if that's going to be this season, right? So I think that's more of a Jerry Jones just professing his love for Sean Lee and like his guys. He's always been so loyal to the people on his team. So I think that's more of what you're hearing. I don't think it's as much about, I don't know if I think Sean Lee's going to be back this season.
So it's been an up and down year for the Eagles, of course, following the Super Bowl victory, and injuries have played a pretty big factor. You look at the depth chart in the secondary, and it's a lot of players that not many people have heard of that watch NFL football. But what have you made of their season so far? Injuries aside, what do you think has led to them to be 6-6 at this point?
Well, the inconsistency in their run game on offense, look, we can speak to a lot of things with their secondary. When you nailed it with the defensive backs that are guys that, you know, I think if you made a trivia game and you like, we were like, which one of these was a starter last season? And you'd be like, just kidding, none of them. So, you know, ultimately in this way, that's a huge difference. But if you add that to an inconsistent run game, you're really in trouble because you don't control the clock, right? If a team can come back on you so easily by throwing the ball, so quick strikes against you, and you don't have a run game to eat up the clock, you're kind of like double-edged, you know, two times hurting yourself, right? Like both of those things complement each other in the negative way. And then I went back and watched all of those defensive snaps for the Jim Schwartz defense for the Eagles, and they're really playing kind of one defense. Most teams in the NFL, they play about 30% base defense and 70% exotic fronts to face a situation that they see. Not the Eagles this season, because of that, the injuries to their defensive backs, it's pretty much like their base defense is like something like 80% of the time. So that's really not helpful because you're not facing the same situation 80% of the time.
I want to look at the Thursday nighter tonight and focus primarily on the Titans, who are 6-6. They're a game back of the Ravens, right in that logjam for that second wild card in the AFC. And they've had a really weird year. They've lost a couple of weird games. They lost to the Bills. They got shut out at home by the Ravens, but they beat Dallas in Dallas. They beat the Patriots and Eagles at home. They're kind of a hard team to get a read on. So how do you kind of forecast not just tonight, but their prospects for the rest of the season to try and back up last year's playoff appearance with another one?
Well, you're totally right. They are a very weird, I'm going to say the word inconsistent team, yeah, because we haven't seen, like, beating the Patriots. The reason that they were able to beat the Patriots was because they were able to bring defensive pressures from all over the front. Like, that's such a key indicating factor of who wins. Like, can you bring consistent pressure all across the front from different areas? That's great. So when they're able to do that, you've seen them do awesome things. The weird part is, if you go back and look just on first down, like, the Titans obviously are run first team. They run the ball, you know, top three in the NFL just overall on any down, but they run the ball second most on first down, but they are actually like the worst yards per carry on it. So they need to switch up a little bit of their play calling, because obviously whatever, you know, teams are ready for it, and it's not been very effective for them. So they're kind of putting Marcus Mariota at a disadvantage by always, you know, they're not even averaging. It's less than 4 yards per rushing attempt. That's pretty hard. That's tough sledding after that if you're constantly behind the sticks.
Cynthia Freeland, NFL Network analyst, joining us here on Sportsnet tonight. It's Rob Wong. Josh Goldberg with you. The hottest team in the NFL, Cynthia, the Houston Texans, taking on the Indianapolis Colts this week. And Houston has won 9 in a row. They are atop the AFC South. And people seem to want to continue to pick holes in this team. And a lot of people believe they are a fraudulent squad, whether it's based on some of the teams that they have faced so far. But you have them winning this week over the Colts. Why are the Texans for real, in your opinion?
Well, when you back up, back up just one step, because I think both of these teams, actually the Colts and the Texans, have people would accuse both of them of having quote unquote fraudulent schedules, because many of the Colts wins came against opponents that don't have great records. So the Colts win streak, which obviously last week was, it ended last week. But ultimately both of these have kind of crazy schedules, which are maybe advantageous schedules is a better way to put it.
Yeah.
But I think when it comes down to the Texans, you know, I'm going to go back to the defensive pressures again, but J.J. Watt, Whitney Merciless, Jadeveon Clowney, J.J. Watt and Jadeveon Clowney together, 18.5 sacks, which is second most of any duo in the NFL. You're just seeing them be super disruptive. And then you're seeing Deshaun Watson adapt to his less than good O-line. So they've been able to use Lamar Miller, actually get that run game going to support Deshaun Watson, so that what he does really well, which is use his speed and improvise, kind of the things we're seeing from like a Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes is, you know, this year's Deshaun Watson. So ultimately we've seen Deshaun kind of be able to kind of settle in, find his receivers, use his running back, and really solidify himself behind a very subpar O-line.
There's a couple of games this weekend that have really caught my eye. And we talked about the Cowboys and the Eagles, and then the Sunday nighter between the Bears and the Rams is a big one. But I got a real keen interest in that Ravens-Chiefs game. It's kind of a irresistible force meets an immovable object with the Ravens D and the Chiefs offense. And more than anything, I'm looking at that Chiefs offense, and I know the Kareem Hunt situation off the field is well documented, but just looking purely on the field, his absence, Spencer Ware, Charcandrick West, Damian Williams, do you think that they can step up collectively enough to fill in, I don't know, 75% of what Hunt was doing and not have the Chiefs miss too much of a beat as they look to, you know, try and win a Super Bowl?
So here's how I navigate this. I think Spencer Ware and Charcandrick West, we've seen this act before. They were both in the team last year. Like they know this offense. They know what Andy Reid's vision is with the spread offense and how he wants to execute it. Damian Williams is a really interesting prospect. So if you go back to like Miami and how they used him, he does have some of that short passing upside that you don't really see. I mean, look, Spencer Ware is more of a known quantity, as is Charcandrick West. So you're saying, you know, kind of familiarity with the playbook. And then Damian Williams like has sneaky upside in that situation. Now, do I think against the Ravens it's going to be sneaky upside? Not necessarily. That's a really tough defense to face. So I'm curious really in this game to see how the O-line holds up for the Chiefs, because that's kind of going to be the key to this game. Now, the other key to this game is going to be the Chiefs defense, because last week against the Raiders, they allowed a 75% third down conversion rate, which is atrocious. So they need to get better on defense as well in order to actually kind of settle down a little bit. It was a very dramatic week for all of them last week. So ultimately we're going to see who they are a little bit more this week. So I think Patrick Mahomes throws for just a bunch of yards, and I think that's the way to beat the Ravens.
Cynthia Freeland, NFL Network analyst, joining us here on Sportsnet tonight. Rob Wong, Josh Goldberg. You can see Cynthia on NFL Network's NFL Game Day Pick'em every Friday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern. So I imagine your model puts a lot of things that you know, factors in how a team's going to perform. How does it factor in Joe Philbin, now the interim head coach for the Packers, and a guy that has not called plays in 22 years, Cynthia? The last time he did it was in 1996. And when I saw that headline, I could not believe it, but that's what he claims. So with a coaching change in Green Bay, you still have Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams and all those pieces. That's great. But how do you factor in the coaching switch in Green Bay?
Well, I think the kind of the biggest thing to look at in this one is that guy, Aaron Rodgers, who makes adjustments at the line of scrimmage. He's kind of, I'm not going to say he's calling the plays, but I think he's kind of like, he's kind of leading the plays and suggesting some things. He's kind of one of those brilliant minds that I think perhaps is one of the reasons that, you know, some new thought will be good for the Packers next season. But I think Aaron Rodgers, and I'm not worried about Joe Philbin. I'm not worried about the Packers offense in this game. I have a closer matchup between them and the Falcons than other people might have, but this is a good defense to be your first one back calling plays against. I don't mean to be mean to the Falcons defense, but they've been very porous this season. So I think Aaron Jones, I think you'll see, like, they've, you know, if you look back at what the Packers have been doing, they did some weird things, like lots of empty sets. So no running backs in situations where you're like, well, why would you just signal to a defense that's 100% pass, right? It's like third and one, stuff like that. So, you know, I don't think you'll see as many of those kind of weird anomalies from a play calling situation. I think maybe it's going to go back to a little bit more traditional, like let's get Aaron Jones involved and make sure the run game's a little bit solidified. And I think Aaron Rodgers, there's honestly, like, you know, my gut, so my math says that Aaron Rodgers is a really, really top quarterback this weekend. But my gut also says, like, well, we could see Aaron Rodgers throw for 5 touchdowns just because, right? Like, angry Aaron Rodgers revenge game.
Yeah.
So.
For sure, but I'm looking at his numbers, and he's 5th in the league in passing yards. I don't think he's thrown an interception in, like, almost 340 attempts.
That's
only
right.
He's only thrown one all year. But I look at the numbers. I know the Packers are struggling. They're, what, at 4-7-1, and just, you know, they've really hit the skids big time. Like, having watched a lot of Rodgers, what do you kind of make of his season? Has he kind of struggled a little bit? I know it's kind of weird to say that, the word struggle, with Aaron Rodgers, but I look at some of the throws over the last 3-4 weeks, and they've been very un-Aaron Rodgers-like.
Yeah, well, there's a few things. First of all, adjusting to, you know, no Jordy Nelson, some of his, Randall Cobb's been in and out. You know, he has Devontae Adams. Jimmy Graham's a different kind of, they, I think they kind of anticipated him being a little bit, I'm not going to say the word better, but, like, more useful, because he's just such a big red zone target. And we saw last year in Seattle, he was kind of getting back to the more wide receiver use. You know, you saw Aaron Jones come on late in the season. But for me, the biggest difference in this one is his O-line, which has historically, he makes them better, they make him better. They've had, like, a nice symbiotic relationship. This O-line has been severely banged up. He's kind of, I mean, look, everyone talks about how Aaron Rodgers can climb the pocket. He can improvise. He does everything outside the pocket. If you want to be Aaron Rodgers, you beat him in the pocket. That's what everyone says. But I think it's more like Aaron Rodgers is used to a little bit more time, no matter what, no matter where he travels on across the field. So I think maybe a bit more of that pressure, and the fact that, you know, you're not getting the 2.5-3 seconds he's used to. It's more like 2.4 seconds. Like, that's really been a big difference maker too. So I'm not saying Aaron's blameless in it, and he's made some interesting throws that don't look like him, and perhaps he's still hurt. But I also think he hasn't been given the kind of the O-line he's used to.
One more before we let you go, Cynthia, and taking a look at the playoffs down the line here. There's a lot of teams still in the mix, in the hunt. You've got the Panthers and the Eagles and the Vikings on that bubble there. The Vikings currently projected in for a wild card matchup. And in the AFC, you've still got the Colts, Broncos, Titans. We'll see tonight. Dolphins at 6-6. How do you think it all shakes down in both conferences the rest of the way?
Well, first of all, the Seattle and Minnesota matchup for me right now is really interesting, because you guys know this, being in Canada, it's cold only, you know, part of the year, right? January is a cold time. There could be only one home cold weather game in all of the NFC, and that could be Chicago. So the way it could play out, that could be really interesting. The winner of Seattle and Minnesota this week could really be for the difference maker, like who has to go to cold Chicago, right, and who doesn't. And I think it would be a really disadvantageous for a team like, you know, Minnesota playing Chicago again, the third time in the cold, you know, in January. Like that could be tricky, because everyone else is inside or here in Los Angeles where the weather isn't a factor. So that's really interesting to me on the NFC side. And I think the Seahawks make it in, and I think the Vikings stay and make it in too. And then everyone else is staying, meaning the Cowboys win the division. And then on the AFC side, I actually think there's a scenario. It's really going to come down to the Ravens or the Colts for me. And I think that we could see with the Colts this week, if they upset Houston, or next week, if they upset the Cowboys, that's how the Colts sneak in. And unfortunately, I think the Broncos, with all their injuries, Emmanuel Sanders and Chris Harris Jr. now gone, I unfortunately think that it's not going to be good for them in terms of making the playoffs. And then the Titans, sneaky win tonight. Like, I have them forecasted to win. and then a few other people losing could really open it up for the Titans. So it's a lot more interesting in the AFC for me than it is in the NFC.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun to watch beginning tonight. Titans and Jaguars just about to kick
things
off.
Who you have for that one?
I was saying earlier in the show, Cynthia, I'm a big fan, and I listen to the podcast all the time. So I roll with you. Whoever you got is who I roll with.
Well, I like that answer. Okay. So what about you?
There you go. So I got Titans tonight. Who do you got, Josh?
I got Titans also. Right. I think the Jaguars, that was like their one last kind of show of life last week against Indianapolis, and they'll go back to being the Jaguars that lost 7 straight starting tonight.
All right, so that means the Jaguars
are going to win. I have one more for you guys. Okay. I have one more for you. I'm having a hard time. My math says the Browns, they upset the Panthers. Do you guys agree or disagree?
Ooh, that is a tough one.
It's in Cleveland. It's in Cleveland.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think there's too much upheaval right now in Carolina. Defense is a mess. Ron Rivera's taking over play calling. Cam Newton's shoulder is bothering him.
Co-host is right here.
Yeah, right here. That's who you're looking at. I got Cleveland too.
All right. We'll see how it all shakes out. Cynthia, as always, pleasure talking to you. Thanks again for joining us, and hopefully we'll do it again soon.
Sounds good. Thank you.